We get it. After all the frustration, the endless cycles of hoping for a system that actually works, you're ready for something steady. Something that delivers without constant workarounds or headaches. That's why we're excited to introduce the 2025 redesign of the Buzz CRM. Built with you in mind, it's more intuitive, faster, and smarter than ever. Finally, a CRM that sees your worth, streamlines your workflows, and gives you the tools to thrive without needing to prove yourself over and over again. Because you deserve a lifeline after all those outdated platforms. You deserve a system that keeps up with your goals and grows with your success. This isn't just a redesign, it's a revolution. Visit thebuzzcrm.com today. That's thebuzzcrm.com.
Hi, everybody. It's Richard Zwicky with High on Healthy. And joining us today, we have Andrew Ecker, who is an author, speaker, and educator who works with people, helping them excel in life and understanding the powerful principles of earth-based wisdom. Welcome aboard the show, Andrew.
Thank you. I'd like to introduce myself in ancestral language.
Go ahead. So,
Dagote She Ende Andrew Ecker Yinishe Adona E Nishinigi E Inde Nishe Irish Bashachin Inde Dashache German Dashanalia Kote Goe Itishli E Portland, Oregon Inisha Shama E Kathy Lindsay Woye Shaza E Del Ecker Wole. My name is Andrew Ecker. My mother, Kathy Lindsay. My father, Del Ecker. My mother's mother, Elva Gallegos, Apache woman from New Mexico. She grew up in a little town called Capitan, right outside the Mescalero Reservation. Although my ancestral lines go back to the Madera Valley of Texas and Chihuahua, Mexico, the Apaches from this area are called La Pond Band Apache. My father's mother, Evelyn Beatty, an Irish woman from Pennsylvania, she used to tell me my ancestor, William Beatty, fought in the Revolutionary War, and she was very proud of being a daughter of the Revolution. My mother's father, Leroy Lindsay, a Korean and Vietnam War veteran, and my father's father, Wayne Ecker, a World War II veteran. I have a daughter, Bailey, a son, Peyton, a beloved fiance named Monica. I was born in Portland, Oregon, the ancestral land of the Multnomah, Clackamas, and Willamette. Although I currently reside in the ancestral land of the Akmal, Atam, the Peeposh, and the Hohokam in Phoenix, Arizona. Grateful to be here.
Well, nice to have you on board. Was that of the First Nations languages, was that the Apache language? Or
It's a language that we call Inde Baza, which means the people's tongue. The scientists referred to it as Athabascan. Okay. This language is derivatives of this language are spoke from Alaska to Louisiana and as far south as Mexico.
Right.
So it's a very, very large lingual group. Within that is the Apache or Inde people, the Diné people, the Athabascans. There's a lot of different groups that are a part of that linguist group.
And there's a tremendous amount. It's hard to keep with so many languages, it's hard to keep them all alive. So it's nice that there's one common tongue that also manages to be kept alive. Actually that leads me into, one of the first points of conversation is, on the show, we have the premise and we have the belief that there's no one path to mental health. There's the right path for each individual, and those vary and differ. And we've covered off quite a variety of different ways people do approach how do they become healthy. And healthy is mind and body and soul, and it is an integrated experience. You are approaching it in a way that differs from others we've had on the show. And you're working and integrating your ancestors' experience into mental health. Explain to us how you do that.
So within that introduction is actually a blueprint for a healthy individual. Mm-hmm. So acknowledging myself, this gives me an opportunity to embrace a relationship with the child within me. And Then my mom represents the archetype of the feminine. My father represents the archetype of the masculine. So just within those three, we have a trinity of opportunities to explore optimal health and optimal self-identity. And noticing that the feminine in the tradition is not bound to gender. It's actually an archetypal energy within a man and also within a woman.
Right.
So it's a way of embracing the nurturing side of myself, the cycles of emotion, It's a way of honoring my emotions and understanding that in that part of myself, I can have a relationship to my sorrow, to my grief, to my anxiety, even to the expanse of my mental health concerns, including substance use disorder, schizophrenia, depression, all these really elaborate ideas and concepts of how we have determined these sorts of parts of the human experience in our contemporary culture. So this gives me a whole idea of how to relate to myself.
And which then, is a consistent, which to interrupt, it's a consistent theme across all forms of all approaches, which is to give yourself permission to have compassion for yourself.
100%. And that's a very important principle within the feminine. And it is balanced by the logical, linear, and protection of the masculine. So this is a very powerful model that gives me the permission slip to protect that child within me, to set safe safe boundaries, to be able to come up with linear support systems for the child, to say to a person, hey, I need to take a walk right now. You know, yeah. I need to get a drink of water right now. That's that linear support system that comes from the power of the masculine. We have a way of articulating this in the way of beauty, in the way of protection. So when a child is nurtured and protected, what happens to the child? It grows healthy.
They flourish. Correct.
Exactly. So, you know, that simplicity of that is so relevant to the condition of what we're going through now. We have a huge mental health crisis, and oftentimes we have forgot the practices of our ancestors that have built healthy, integrative people since the dawn of cultural identity.
Right.
And it's, you know, as a person that grew up in an environment where both my parents were addicted to drugs, my mom, you know, died of a cocaine overdose. My father died of cirrhosis of the liver by hepatitis C. You know, growing up in that environment, I was very conditioned against contemporary medicine and the contemporary system. You know, it was took a lot for me to get to a point where I said I needed help. And there's so many individuals out there that are isolating right now and feel alone, when really there's a whole community of people that are dedicated to helping and serving them on their path of optimizing their health. And for me, when I became aware of these integrative approaches to creating self-identity, to creating ceremonial introduction, and to expanding relational spirituality, I was a sponge for that.
So somebody who is feeling isolated, how do you approach them to open that door, to become part of the group, to be able to take that first step? Because that's the hardest step.
It is. It's a huge step. And for me, the dissolving of the barrier of my ego was a huge learning that came later. But really, initially, I think that by promoting voices that a person can have an empathetic response to, we're giving people an ability to feel like they're not alone. Now, when I was first in recovery, I would go to 12-step, I would go to all kinds of different meetings, and I wouldn't hear people talk about, you know, using heroin with their father. You know, I didn't hear people talk about these things. But sadly, now working in mental health, I can tell you that out of a group of 30, if I ask how many have gotten high with their parents, I'll get almost a third of people raising their hands.
Right.
And that's the condition of the state of failure that our system is at right now. So
Same as the cycle of abuse, right? It's those who suffer from the abuse become the abusers, and one in three of those who are abused do so. And that you add on the people who are traumatized and you have the cycle.
It's the same real statistic. You know, it's that self-harm, it's the conditioning, it's, you know, but what's important now is that as we rise up voices that can give those individuals an opportunity to see the other side of the destructive behaviors that are a part of that generational trauma, they can begin to say, you know what, my story isn't that strange. You know, that my story isn't that, there is hope for me.
Well, the big thing is for people to recognize that what they've gone through and are going through is not unique, that there are others who have done so. Because that gives you hope that you can as well.
It's huge. And that's why the peer support model is a very important model for us to embrace. You know, I feel like there's still a lot of I mean, just look at the hourly wage that an average peer support person is making in a hospital environment. You know, it's not necessarily where it could be, but I think that it's important that it's growing.
Right.
You know, and that the system is accepting peer support as a model and lived experience as a relevant education and a value. And as we grow and we begin to nurture that aspect of a healthcare model, we'll begin to see the power of that begin to unfold. And I think that because we're taking those steps, we're starting to see a little bit of momentum in the positive. You know, we're starting to see reduction in overdose. We're starting to see reduction in suicide. We're starting to see that. And that is the evidence of the movement of peer support specialists, I believe, recovery coaches, and also the willingness of those that have licensure to embrace right. this model and to not exclude it, but to say, hey, you know what? We value you and we want you to be a part of our institutional model of healthcare. And
it's also a big part of how destigmatizing the issue and creating space for people to be able just to put up their hands and say, I have dealt with this or I have a problem, makes a dramatic difference.
100%. And, you know, there's been such a stigma and there still is out there. I did a drum circle with a group in rural New Mexico. And this was a group of providers that was an organization that had really done a lot of work to create a community aspect. And I asked this group of providers, there was 35 people in this room. And I asked them how many of them would raise their hands and say they've had a thought of suicide. And you know what? None of them raised their hands in that invitation. And the reality is that we're post-COVID.
Yep.
And the healthcare industry was at a point of break in that experience that we all went through. And to say that you didn't feel like giving up at that point just shows us that we're in a place where intimacy and vulnerability are still looked at as weakness. And we need to get beyond that. We need to get to a place where we're embracing one another and we're saying our vulnerability is our power. And through our vulnerability and our empathy, we can create lasting change. I mean,
yeah, the lasting change is the impact, because wisdom doesn't flash to people overnight. And it's a matter of actually transforming how we approach the issues for everybody. Right. And creating going back to those safe spaces, there's still not enough of them.
100%. And maturity doesn't come with age, nor does it come with an institutional document. It comes with responsibility. And importantly, we need to take responsibility for ourselves, you know, and show up and say, hey, you know what? Suffering is common to the human condition. And I'm here with you and I'm going to acknowledge that I've been there.
Yep.
And that I'm able to be a part of this movement, because we need a movement.
Yep. Well, and you know, many people suffer from all sorts of horrific abuse and exposure to trauma and issues. And it doesn't, you know, no one person's challenges should be denied, but the reality is how we handle them going forward when we're adults and how we allow them to affect us is something that's within our own power. Now, it's hard for people to accept that sometimes from an emotional perspective. From a rational, it's easy, but from emotional, until somebody's had the chance to actually identify and speak to their trauma or their abuse, recognize it and understand it's not happening anymore today, it's hard for them to disassociate. So with that, you know, that ability to put it away and move forward, that's a huge piece. How do you facilitate that? Because you use drum circles as one of the tools. How does that approach work?
Well, I think that, you know, going back to my own personal experience with the drum, I first encountered recreational drumming, community-based drumming in 1994, if you believe that.
Okay.
And I was invited to this drum circle. And life was chaos. I was living in the projects, you know, low income HUD housing, right. with my mom. She was, you know, people using intravenous drugs in and out of the house. I was 18 years old. I had no direction in my life. But yet when I hit that drum, I was able to feel a sense of control.
Right. And control is important.
Yeah. It made a sound, right? I hit the drum and it made a sound. And then that led to practicing. And there's only three notes on the drum, but I was able to obtain those three notes and I was able to feel like I was a part of something. First of all, you know, the community embraced me without judgment. There was still, you know, I hadn't made the transition into drumming as a tool for helping me in my substance use disorder. There was still a lot of that involved, but it was a pathway into building relationship without the use of substances. Now imagine a life where substances are integrated into every family experience. They're integrated into social experiences. They're integrated into friendships. Everything in my life revolved around substances. So now I have this tool that potentially could show me a path to creating relationships without the use of substance. And that happened years later. But at the beginning of it, it was a way of connecting me to a fun experience that felt rebellious. It felt tribal. It felt ancient. And it really connected me to something that was dormant inside of me that needed to be expressed. The drum circles that I facilitate now are really based on post-colonial North America, specifically New Orleans, where Native Americans, Africans, Europeans, people from all over the world were able to gather with a common language of improvisational drumming. That improvisational drumming created a foundation for jazz, blues, R&B, gospel, and even eventually rock and roll were all influenced by that. So it's not culturally specific other than the culture of inclusion, equity, and diversity. That in itself is a culture, and that's threatening right now, but you know, for a lot of people, but it is a culture that creates an artistic value that brings about transformation in people. If we create a safe space, like what you were talking about, a sacred space, we can have a place where my voice can be integrated and even entrained with your voice, and we can dissolve the barriers of separation where we can find our authenticity and our collective voice. And in that collective voice, there's a lot of solutions that manifest and social emotional learning. There's a lot of really powerful therapeutic aspects that people don't even need to know that are happening. It's, you know, we're crossing.
It doesn't have to be obvious. It has to just, it starts having an effect on you emotionally, which helps you bring down those barriers. How often do you run these?
Anywhere from 1 to 5 a day.
Oh, okay.
You know, primarily in healthcare, and we're talking skilled nursing, memory care, post-acute, psychiatric lockdowns, and then, of course, the drug and alcohol treatment facilities, which are really where I feel like my voice can be best served. In that area of the drug and alcohol treatment facilities, I find a lot of where I can create that powerful peer support model that really resonates with the individuals. And I'm able to weave story into the experience, which is a part of really the commitment to the legacy of creating a safe, sacred space. And, you know, you were touching on what it means to create a sacred space. And for me, at the beginning of every drum circle, I have people put their hand in front of their mouth and say judgment and hold that judgment in their hand and throw it out. Because, you know, when I evaluate what the drugs and alcohol gave me, I can say that they gave me that judgment-free zone. And as a person that was bounced around from family member to family member, mom would be in prison, dad would be in prison, aunties, uncles, you know, grandmas were responsible for raising me. I never really felt like I had a judgment-free zone. And I know that the addict that's suffering needs that. They need to find that place of just acceptance and love.
Yes, because without that, you can't move past. You can't begin to heal. So you run 1 to 5 of these a day, and people from all walks of life gather. They don't all have alcohol addictions or opiate addictions. It's people who are looking for a new way, a new outlet, and a means to which to communicate with themselves and others. How do people get involved?
Well, right now we're in Arizona and we're facilitating. We actually live a very modest life and we travel full time. So in the wintertime, the base of my business, healthcare business, is in Phoenix, Arizona. So we facilitate a weekly drum circle at basically an RV park that we live at weekly on Fridays. And we also facilitate a sound medicine journey. So a part of the Drumming Sounds protocol. So we've created an evidence-based wellness intervention that utilizes recreational drumming and sound medicine as this peer support model of helping people create a really healthy lifestyle. And a portion of that is about 15 minutes of mindfulness where I play the Native American flute. My fiance Monica plays the gong, chimes, and Tibetan bowls. And that really creates this whole nervous system reset. Now, through literally right. facilitating thousands of these experiences, we've expanded to create an hour or an hour and a half sound journey where we're utilizing a technique that we call vibrational programming, where we're right. attuning ourselves consciously to the sound to displace the energies that no longer serve that optimal state. And that's another offering that we facilitate weekly here. And right. thankfully, the RV resort has given us an opportunity to invite community members. These are right. well adults to the experience free of charge. And that's a really great offering that we facilitate. We also do corporate team building. We do, you know, retreats, family reunions, weddings. I mean, you name it. Rich, we've done those programs. I mean, refugee groups, HIV, AIDS, we've right. done just, you know, yeah. over 5,000. So it's quite a portfolio.
So though listeners who want to learn more and, you know, about how this works, your approach and how to find out more about you, how could they learn more?
So it's ceremonial introduction. So I'm going to give you two websites, okay? The sure. ceremonial introduction practice that we kind of unpacked at the beginning of the conversation. You can get a free copy of my book at thesacred7.com. Okay. If you'd like to purchase a signed copy of my book, for every signed copy, I send one into the Arizona Department of Corrections. Okay. And, you know, a little quick story briefly. One of the guys that I mentor as a recovery coach, a Navajo relative, Diné relative, he said, "Uncle, I have your book, but the last chapter's ripped out." And he had relapsed and gone back to prison. So that felt really good, because what that meant is that somebody had ripped out that last chapter and sent it home to their family. Right. And that was a really good feeling. So all the folks that get to purchase a book, you know, I just sent a whole bunch of them in, know that those books are affecting people on the inside and it's making a difference. So that's the Sacred Seven. It's all spelled out.
That's a nice thing to do. Very nice, powerful thing to do.
Thank you. And then there's Drumming Sounds. Okay. So Drumming Sounds is the evidence-based wellness intervention. They can get information on our trainings, our drum circles. We're on Facebook, but drummingsounds.com is the website for the drum circle. So you can see that there's a theme here of earth-based wisdom. Everything we do goes back to tens of thousands of years of evidence-based practice in these tools that have helped create healthy, integrated communities since the dawn of culture.
Yep. No, it's wonderful. There's many different, like I said at the outset, there's so many different paths to health, and this is one which thousands of people have followed, and there's a reason for that. Andrew, thanks for joining us on the show. For those who do want to follow up, go visit drummingsounds.com or thesacred7.com, and you can learn more about Andrew, his book, and his approach. Thanks for joining us. And thanks to everybody for listening. I'm Richard Zwicky, and we'll be back again with you soon on High and Healthy.
We get it. After all the frustration, the endless cycles of hoping for a system that actually works, you're ready for something steady. Something that delivers without constant workarounds or headaches. That's why we're excited to introduce the 2025 redesign of the Buzz CRM. Built with you in mind, it's more intuitive, faster, and smarter than ever. Finally, a CRM that sees your worth, streamlines your workflows, and gives you the tools to thrive without needing to prove yourself over and over again. Because you deserve a lifeline after all those outdated platforms. You deserve a system that keeps up with your goals and grows with your success. This isn't just a redesign, it's a revolution. Visit thebuzzcrm.com today. That's thebuzzcrm.com.